This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
This is Radio EcoShock with a special on the dangers of the fracking rush in the western United States. Next up is a longtime rancher along the Missouri River near Bainville, Montana. Pat Wilson's family has been there for over a century. Pat can tell us about the oil and gas rush in the famous Bakken Shale Field and draining huge volumes of water from the Missouri River. Pat, welcome.
Thanks, Alex. Yes, I'm a fourth generation, I guess, cattle rancher near Bainville, which is in the Montana portion of the Bakken Formation, a rather large oil-bearing formation spread out over North Dakota, Montana, Saskatchewan, maybe a little bit into South Dakota. It's a tight formation, which means that the oil is firmly tied to the rock and therefore has to be accessed by means of hydraulic fracturing.
Right, and you can't really see it on the surface. It's something that's under the ground, and that's where it is.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's about, I think around, in my area, it's around 9,000 feet under. In addition to hydrofracking, what is used is called directional drilling. Here, the spacing unit is 1,280 acres. They'll go down, make a slow bend, and make a lateral into the Bakken and drill about 2 miles, laterally, and then hydrofrack it and then extract the petroleum.
Well, why don't you give us an overview of your concerns with that fracking boom and the Bakken development?
The primary concerns that I have is the enormous amount of water, of fresh water, that's used. And not only used, but once it's used, it's gone for good. In Montana, there's about 11,000 active oil and gas wells, of which about 800 are out of the Bakken Formation. In North Dakota, there's many more. I think they've so far drilled about 8,000 Bakken wells. Hydrofracking involves forcing water mixed with a variety of different materials and chemicals under the ground at extreme pressures. And as the wells get bigger and longer, like I said, 2 miles long, they consume, say, between 1 million and 5 million gallons of water per well, and we're talking thousands of wells. Now, we're in a very dry area, and we also are adjacent to the Missouri River, which is a primary source of water for hydrofracking. We only get about 10 to 14 inches of rainfall per year, and so we rely enormously on the aquifers and the streams that run into the Missouri as well as the Missouri itself. Now, the high demand is triggering a lot of things. The state agency in charge of water rights in my home state, Montana, the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation, reported 13 illegal water depots just over the summer of 2012. Rather than reacting to that, instead of fining the entities illegally using water, they instead developed a bill that would allow for more water use for oil and gas. House Bill 37 was passed the last legislature and incentivizes the use of any excess water that current water rights holders are not using. In other words, water that was originally obtained for agricultural purposes can now be leased by the agricultural producer to the oil corporation for use in hydrofracking. In addition, more permits are coming. The agency's website says that 13 fracking water permit applications are currently pending in Roosevelt and Richland County. Over 70% of the requested volume slated to come from surface water. The industry argues that the amount of water actually being used still is a minimal percentage of the total available. Well, that may be true. I lived for a time in New Mexico, and I'm sure that same argument was made with great river systems like the Rio Grande and the Colorado until they are completely dewatered now, I think, by the time they reach the sea. The Army Corps of Engineers has plans to sell water to oil and gas companies from a number of reservoirs in Missouri, and I think we should be very concerned about this change. The organization I belong to, the Northern Plains Resource Council, notes another thing, and that there's no coordinated overview of water usage. Multiple agencies in Montana are responsible for different aspects of water law, and no single agency is addressing the cumulative water use by the oil and gas industry in Montana and its implications for state policy. Now, once this water is used, and I can't stress this enough, once the water is used for hydrofracking, a good deal of it flows back, and when it flows back, it's so impregnated with salt and chemicals that basically it's become a hazardous material. So after the water is used, it has to be taken to an injection well and pumped again thousands of feet under the surface just to get rid of it. So once the water is used, it is gone for good. It's taken out of the hydrologic cycle permanently. Now, what we're seeing is the tip of an iceberg because the companies assure us that, well, for example, they're planning 7 wells per 1,280-acre spacing unit in our area. So that would be like basically a 7-fold increase from what we have now. So there is a huge amount of water that could be at risk here.
The drought in the Midwest eased off in the spring of 2013 in places like Ohio, but it's still been very dry west of that. How long can this fracking industry drain away water resources before ranching or even human settlement becomes endangered?
I'm concerned about the, for example, House Bill 37 in Montana. I am very concerned about the precedent established there where we can start to divert water from agricultural uses over to the fracking industry, and especially if the drought locally in eastern Montana, two-thirds of eastern Montana is under a drought right now. Also, in addition to the Missouri, wells, dams, any kind of reservoir or live creek has been tapped for fracking, and that, I think, presents a concern, too.
Well, unlike many Western residents, Pat, you do own the mineral rights under your land, and you make some money from that oil. Why are you complaining now? What brought you to speak out?
It's true that we're making money short-term here in the Bakken area. I don't know if we have much choice because of things like forced pooling, which is like another story that I probably don't have time to go into. But fresh water, I think, is a commodity literally beyond price here. If we tamper too much with that incredibly precious resource, at the end of it, one fear would be that all we have is money, which you can't drink.
Pat Wilson, has your family experienced anything about the stress or pollution on a personal level?
Well, yes, we have. I'm not going to exaggerate it and say to a tremendous degree. We've had one oil spill on our place, which did, you know, briefly breach the containment area, was cleaned up. I think we pressured a little bit to have it cleaned up properly. There's been minor things along the way. A water tanker tipped over, and a small amount of salt water was spilled then. We've dodged a bullet several times. East of me, there was a significant salt water spill into a creek with, I think, something like well over 1 million gallons spilled there. This did not affect me directly, though.
And some big changes have come to that village of Bainville, Montana, the former population of 300. Do you want to talk to us briefly about that Alberta company, the trucks, the work camps, the subdivisions and all that?
Oh, I guess I could. Yes, a company called Procore essentially mines a kind of sand found in Wisconsin, which forms the basis for a substance called propant. It is the stuff that's mixed with water and forced through hydrofracking into the formations to sort of pry them open and keep them open. This company has set up in Bainville a huge depot offloading this sort of sand. It has transformed the face of this community almost completely. Our school system is pretty overwhelmed. Our sewer facilities are overwhelmed. We have 2 man camps now, one on the west side of town and one on the east side of town. There's talk for our tiny little village, which is sort of flabbergasting. They're talking of building a Marriott here. Some people project that our population will go from 300 to 5,000 people, which I think may be a little extreme. But judging from the increases I've seen over the last 2 years, it could be within the realm of possibility. Most infrastructures here are either overwhelmed completely or on the verge of coming unraveled.
Yeah, people don't talk about the social costs. I mean, you have a fairly tight-knit community. People know one another. Now suddenly there's strangers from all over the U.S., all over the world, coming for big money jobs on the short term. They're bringing their kids in and out of schools. It must be unsettling.
Well, it is unsettling for a native such as myself. I can spend an entire day in Bainville and not see a soul that I know. And that's a sort of wrenching experience.
Pat, do you think the Bakken Field is a bubble? And if so, what will be left for the next generation?
That's a good question. My son and I mull that one over extensively. It seems to me that Montana, sadly, is a resource-based economy. And built right into that, I think, is a boom or bust cycle. This is my own personal opinion, that sometimes things are ballyhooed to the skies in terms of production and sort of visions of a new El Dorado. I wonder if some of that isn't for the benefit of investors that the corporations are trying to sell on the idea of sticking a lot of money up here. Is it a bubble? I don't know for sure. I am profoundly uneasy about that.
Is there anything else you would like to add as we wrap up here?
If no one has ever seen a boom and all of the things that go along with the boom, it is unbelievable. I sometimes feel that I'm in some sort of either a dream or a nightmare. I'm not sure.
We've been talking with rancher Pat Wilson. His family has lived near Bainville, Montana for more than 100 years. Pat is a member of the Northern Plains Resource Council at northernplains.org. Pat, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us.
Thank you.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.